It's all going to zero against Bitcoin.
It's going up forever, Warren.
You're against Bitcoin. You're against freedom.
Yo, welcome to another episode of Simply Bitcoin Live. We're your number one source for the peaceful Bitcoin revolution, code breaking news, culture, matic warfare. We will be your guide through the separation of money and state. And make no mistake, ladies and gentlemen, that's exactly what we are living through these days. The great disintermediation of money, the great disintermediation of information. And in the process of all this disintermediation comes freedom, that sweet, sweet freedom. I think we're going to have freedom the likes of which humanity hasn't experienced, maybe ever, maybe in a very long time. I don't know how to correctly describe it, but it makes me very, very excited. I will tell you this. I think the world's going to be a much, much better place once the state gets its hands out of controlling money and out of controlling information. I think the world's going to be a much better place because of that. So on today's episode, we are going to talk about Michael Saylor's plans to sell $216 million worth of MicroStrategy shares. And you know what he's going to do with selling those MicroStrategy shares? He's going to buy a whole lot of personal Bitcoin. So Michael Saylor's not only, you know, stacking MicroStrategy's stack, but he's also stacking his own personal stack. You know, and someone actually did the calculations today. Once Bitcoin hits $1 million per coin, Michael Saylor will be richer than Elon Musk. So I think the Chad Saylor is going for the top spot, you know, by buying Bitcoin. I think that's pretty badass. I think the only person richer than him would be Satoshi. But I don't think Satoshi's coming back. So anyway, it's going to be a great, great episode. I'm really, really excited for it. We also have a very special guest today to talk about very interesting topics. And of course, we have Michelle Daly. No, we have Michelle Yearly. No, we have the one, the only Michelle Weekly. How you doing, Michelle?
Hey, guys, I'm good.
Welcome to the show. Super, super happy to have you on. We should have had you on way sooner. So we're hyped.
We're here now.
We're here. We've crossed the bridge. All right. And of course, my legendary co-host, he's always optimistic. The one, the only, the optimist Fields. He is not smiling today. We have a problem.
It's my serious game face. It's my serious game face. And yeah, I've literally been waiting for this show. I'm super hyped to have Michelle on this one. We met for the first time at Unconfiscatable in Vegas. And I kind of got a little, you know, a little preface of what this conversation is going to be about. You know, Michelle worked within the Beast, guys. And I think this is an episode and that I'm, like I said, still excited for this. And I think this is going to be one of those great episodes. Hence why we brought you on the live show so we could get as much reach as possible on this conversation. And Nico is unaware of exactly what we're going to be talking about on this one. So I think this is going to be a great one. But before we move on, for those that don't know who you are, Michelle, maybe just give like a you know, 1 minute TLDR of what you did in your past life, and then we can get into the show.
Sure. So my background is in computer science. I worked for 10 or 15 years in tech startups. I lived abroad. I ended up in Dubai working for some tech startups there. And that's where I got recruited to work in foreign direct investment. And that's kind of where the story that you guys all know starts. So I spent a lot of time over in the Middle East, in Asia, in China, working in FDI and kind of in the belly of the beast at the top of the corruption. And in 2018, I burnt out of that. I retired. I came back to Florida and got really, really into Bitcoin, and now we're here.
I love that. That's epic. That's great. What a crazy story. So, you're a world traveler, going to different places, experiencing the insides, the how this is how all of this is working internally. Yeah, this is crazy. I can't wait for the culture. Opti, maybe we should do the culture first.
I want
should
to
just
kinda
shake it up.
I mean, I want like a good block for Michelle on today's show. So maybe we just kind of like get through the numbers and the news as quickly as possible. So we give Michelle as much time.
Okay. Let's do that. Let's do that. I'm really excited for today's episode. Guys, strap in. Let's jump straight into the numbers. Let's do it.
the Bitcoin numbers.
Is your Bitcoin in cold storage really secure? Is your seed phrase really secure? Stampseed's do-it-yourself kit has everything you need to hammer your seed words into commercial-grade titanium plates instead of just writing them on paper. Don't store your generational wealth on paper. Paper is prone to water damage, fire damage. You want to put your generational wealth on one of the strongest metals on planet Earth, titanium. Your words are actually stamped into this metal plate with this hammer and these letter stamps. And once your words are in, they aren't going anywhere. No risk of the plate breaking apart and pieces falling everywhere. Titanium stamped seeds will survive nearly triple the heat produced by a house fire. They're also crush-proof, waterproof, non-corrosive, and time-proof, all things that paper is not, allowing you to hodl your Bitcoin with peace of mind for the long haul. Stamp your seed on Stampseed.
All right, everybody. We have a lot of numbers to go through. And of course, you guys know the deal. I dropped a glass water bottle on my laptop yesterday and it absolutely cracked the screen. So I'm using my wife's laptop.
Do not let Nico divert you from the signal. Make sure you are not using plastic water bottles.
Yeah. I mean, it was. I think BJ Ditcher was trolling me a little bit.
Yeah.
Morning.
He's in the chat. He's in the chat right now.
Oh, BJ's in the chat. We gotta bring BJ on the show. We gotta bring BJ back on the show. BJ is an absolute legend. Freedom fighter, living freedom fighting legend. Okay. Anyways, I made it super easy for you guys. Scan the QR code on your screen. It'll take you directly to the Stampseed website, and you can get yourself a Stampseed. Just show it off, Opti. Show it off. There you go. Show off the special edition Simply Bitcoin Stampseed. You can use promo code Simply to get yourself a 15% discount. At the time of recording, the Bitcoin price is 44,235. Sats per dollar, 2,261. Market cap, $866 billion. Decline from all-time high, 35.9%. Days since all-time high, 784 days. Bitcoin versus gold market cap, 6.36%. Supply percentage in corporate treasuries, 8.7%. Total Lightning Network capacity, 4,955 Bitcoin. Block height, 824,355. So in the grand scheme of things, Bitcoin is still a baby. Anyways, today's number section, we're going to show another commercial that Wall Street is already advertising these ETFs and it hasn't even been approved yet. And they're getting in the know. They get the most interesting man in the world. They hire that guy. They make him, you know, to mention Satoshi, you know, they're paying a lot of money to use popular music, the rights to use popular music in a lot of these commercials. It's absolutely crazy what is happening right now. Anyways, so here's Bitcoin Magazine. They retweeted one of the latest commercials, and let's take a look at it. Let's check it out.
15 years ago, a revolution was born, not in the streets, but in the silent depths of the digital world. A defiant spark, a whisper of change in the aftermath of the financial crises. They called it Bitcoin, and the very first block was created 15 years ago today. Bitcoin embodies empowerment in the digital age. Its fixed and predictable supply makes it a potentially robust store of value, free from the control of any individual.
Did they put jazz music?
The white paper displayed above me laid the foundation for this novel technology, offering a solution for people anywhere in the world to securely send and receive digital money using the internet. Like any 15-year-old, Bitcoin is still a teenager. People are still trying to understand its place in the world. But one thing is certain, we are committed to helping you understand and explore the transformative potential of Bitcoin. Happy birthday, Bitcoin.
Okay. At the end, the only thing that I would say is I wish he just like took his arm and just showed his lunar tattoo and just put a Sharpie and just like crossed it out and just like put a Bitcoin sticker. That would have been amazing. It was good. I mean, we should rate these commercials, Opti. We should do an episode where we rate these commercials.
Wait, meme review where we're rating Wall Street memes?
Yes, 100%. I still give the top slot to the most interesting man in the world. That one was the most hilarious. Is it the same actor? I don't think it was the same actor. I think they might have gotten a you know, a, what's it called when someone looks a doppelganger? This is a weird word. Anyways, Michelle Daly. No, Michelle Yearly. No, Michelle Weekly. What are your thoughts on you know, these Wall Street ETF commercials? They're releasing them and this thing hasn't even been approved. What's the deal with that?
Well, that's how you know it's going to be approved, because they've always got the inside track. You know, they're working way ahead of public information. So I think we knew it was happening. Quite frankly, I don't think BlackRock would have even applied had they not already had sort of like backroom deals set up. And the commercials are just the next sort of confirmation of that to me.
Gotcha. And let me ask you something. Do you think that has to do with this price run up from like 25, 30K? Is that insiders like kind of front running, or is this all kind of speculation?
I don't know. You know, I think to me, the price movement is not, it's not that significant. Like, I'm waiting for, you know, let's get 20, 30, 40% swings until I really care.
What, you know, a little bit for ants?
Yeah, exactly. Like, who knows? You know.
So one of the common themes this cycle, and, you know, the legendary American HODL has been talking about it, which is this idea of the diminishing returns. A lot of people are, you know, kind of bummed out. They perceive as Bitcoin's, you know, best days were behind it. What would you say to those people? Is there still opportunity in Bitcoin?
Absolutely. I think the diminishing returns is just clickbait, honestly. Like, mathematically, you know, we're still working on a four-year cycle. I believe strongly in the four-year cycle. That was like one of the first things I studied. And to me, that explains, you know, the price volatility. I think over a 20, 30 year period, obviously, like historically, we've had an 80% drawdown from each all-time high. And that's changing incrementally, where it's like, instead of 83, it's like an 81 and then 79%. So I think over a long enough time frame during each epoch, the drawdown slowly is less and less. But other than that, for me, it all remains intact.
Yeah. And another thing, like, it's still like, where else are you going to get these types of potential, this type of potential upside and opportunity? I think Saylor proved that, really. I think his MicroStrategy's Bitcoin strategy. Right. It's so funny. Like, the first company that adopts Bitcoin as legal tender, they're called, if you translate to English, it's called the Savior. And then the first company that you know, adopts Bitcoin, proving it as an alternative to holding fiat on their balance sheet, the name of the company is called MicroStrategy. Like, I don't know. It's kind of funny. You couldn't have written the script better if you tried. Anyways, Opti, what are your thoughts on this, brother?
Yeah, well, that was good. That was good. First on touching on the diminishing returns, I think you guys know my view. I fundamentally think that it's wrong. I think, like, kind of what Michelle was saying, that I don't know if I'd call it clickbait, because it's more like, it just seems like negativity. People love to, you know, talk about negative things, and no one's hopeful anymore. Everyone, it's just like cool to be cynical. So I think that's kind of where we're seeing. And then, of course, you know, we only have what, like three data points on the three different Bitcoin cycles. So we have yet to see something different. And so people are just kind of, you know, projecting what the future is going to be based on what the past is. And I really do believe that we're entering in a new era in Bitcoin adoption. Anyways, with that being said, you know, Bitcoin is the supreme monetary asset. And then just kind of talking about that Wall Street ad and the ads in general, first and foremost is like, my thought was like, you guys saw me laughing. I was like, oh, it's Mike Novogratz. Like, okay, all right. It's a Mike Novogratz ad. All right, sweet. I forget what company he's a part of. And like you said, I wish there was a Luna tattoo bit
at
in that.
End,
that
would have been, I'm telling you. At yeah, the end, just like, and then just crossing,
you know, like crossing his arms,
crossing it out, but just like crossing it out and like putting a Bitcoin. Like,
anyways.
And then put like ETF letters, like,
yeah, exactly.
It's not like actual Bitcoin. It's like Bitcoin.
Anyways, on the idea though of like Wall Street doing marketing for Bitcoin, as much as we talk bad about Wall Street on the show, like basically every other episode, that's all we do. We just constantly dunk on Wall Street as much as possible. Actually, any chance we get, we try to dunk on Wall Street. I love seeing them do our marketing for us. You know, I just love seeing them market Bitcoin. They have, you know, they basically have the money printer behind them to do like Hollywood-esque ad for us, and it's just like, like, it's so beautiful. Here we are. We front run Wall Street. We front run the institutions. And hopefully Bitcoin marketing just goes into overdrive. And it's our job to make sure that they are on point and that they're not basically spreading misinformation. And then us over here at Simply Bitcoin is just showing up every single day and being a part of that marketing and hopefully waking up the normies and just the shitcoiners as well, and showing them that, like, yo, there is Bitcoin and there's everything else. And if you believe that crypto is the future of money, well, you're going to really love Bitcoin because it's the actual future of money. So here 100%. We are. This is where we are in the story.
100%. So guys, before we move on to the news section, I do want to give a shout out to a sponsor of Simply Bitcoin Originals, the Bitcoin Way. We want to give them a very special shout out. If you guys have any trouble taking self-custody, just onboarding onto Bitcoin, the Bitcoin Way has your back. Take charge of your financial future. Your Bitcoin, your rules. Unlock your Bitcoin's full potential without traditional constraints. Empower your choices with our expertise in self-custody, where privacy and security are uncompromised. They can help you with a wallet, a node setup, inheritance planage. They have a concierge service. You can call them. They could walk you through this. Individuals and businesses, they're privacy focused. So again, if you guys are new to Bitcoin, and if you're looking to put a big percentage of your net worth into Bitcoin and you're uncomfortable on how to set up a node or how to set up a Bitcoin wallet, the Bitcoin Way has your back. Check out their website and you can book a call with them today. All right, everybody, let's go on to the news. We have a lot to talk about.
The Daily News.
I want to give a shout out to our sponsor, Foundation Devices. It's self-custody done right. They built a premium-grade hardware wallet called Passport right here in the US. It's fully open source and verifiable. It's the most intuitive Bitcoin wallet designed with a UX reminiscent of a simple feature phone. So you will know how to navigate it and use it the moment you pick it up. Get your Bitcoin off exchanges and into your own hands in just a few minutes. Experience the peace of mind that comes with taking ownership of your own keys. After a massive sellout during Bitcoin Miami 2023, the Passport is back in stock at foundationdevices.com. Bitcoin only, open source verifiable, completely air gap security model, gorgeous design craft, premium grade materials. If you're thinking about getting your Bitcoin off exchanges, this is the one for you. Check out the Passport link in the show notes below to learn more. All right, guys, again, I made it incredibly easy for you guys. You could scan the QR code on your screen. It'll take you directly to the Foundation Devices website where you can get yourself a Passport hardware wallet. Remember, guys, not your keys, not your cheese. You do want to take self-custody of your Bitcoin. We highly recommend the Passport. It's really, really awesome. It's beautiful. It's completely open source. They even have Snake on it. You could play Snake on your hardware wallet. That's pretty cool. Anyways, so get yourself a hardware wallet today and check out the Passport by Foundation. All right, everybody. So what I want to talk about today is Michael Saylor. He's dumping some of that MicroStrategy stock, which is like crazy because walk through the mental gymnastics of this. He leverages MicroStrategy to buy more Bitcoin. That makes the shares of MicroStrategy go higher when the price of Bitcoin goes higher. And then when the shares of MicroStrategy go higher, he decides to take some of that off the table without MicroStrategy selling any Bitcoin, so that he can go and buy some Bitcoin himself. Like, what? I wish I had a multi-billion dollar company I could leverage to buy so much Bitcoin. Holy cow. I mean, now it makes sense why he called his company MicroStrategy. You know, this is like a macro strategy. No, he should rename MicroStrategy to Bitcoin Strategy. Holy shit. Anyways, okay. I got very excited, but this is genius. This is very smart. Shout out to Chad Saylor. Even though he was like, what? Even though we front ran him as, you know, normal everyday Bitcoiners, doesn't matter.
Front ran's not a word, apparently, they're telling us in the chat.
Front ran. When you could speak two languages natively, then talk to me. Okay.
I can barely speak one.
Okay. Anyway. Me neither. Okay. In all seriousness, so what happened? So check out this CoinDesk article. Michael Saylor commences plan to sell $216 million worth of MicroStrategy shares. Saylor said earlier that he would use the proceedings from the sales to address personal obligations and buy more Bitcoin to his personal account. MicroStrategy executive chairman Michael Saylor began to sell $216 million worth of company shares on Tuesday, according to a regulatory filing with the SEC. The document shows that Saylor intends to sell 310,000 shares. These shares were awarded as stock options in 2014 and were set to expire in April 2024. The sales plan was disclosed a couple months ago, with Saylor saying during MicroStrategy's third quarter earnings call that he plans to sell 5,000 shares per trading day commencing on January 2nd and continues over 4 months, subject to a minimal price condition. The quarter's 10Q filing said he could sell up to 400,000 shares of his vested options through April 26, 2024. So they asked him about it on a podcast that Michael Saylor went on recently. We have the clip for you guys. It's about a minute long. Let's check it out, and then we will talk about it.
And the first question is for Michael. The 10Q discloses that Michael entered into a 10b5-1 plan to exercise MicroStrategy stock options. Can you please provide further color on the plan and the thought process?
Sure. Yeah, thanks for that question. I was granted a stock option in 2014 with respect to 400,000 shares, which is going to expire next April if I don't exercise it by then. For almost a decade now, at my request, the company has only paid me a $1 salary, and I've chosen not to be eligible for any cash bonuses. Exercising this option will allow me to address some financial obligations, as well as to acquire additional Bitcoin for my personal account. Under my trading plan, I plan to exercise and sell 5,000 shares on each trading day, beginning on January 2nd, 2024. And ending on April 25th, subject to a minimum price condition. This means the sale will take place over almost 4 months. If you'd like more details about the plan, I would refer you to the 10Q. I continue to be optimistic about MicroStrategy's prospects and should note that my equity stake in the company after these sales will remain very significant.
Okay, so hold on a second. The biggest like mic drop moment, because it's like a very serious conversation, right? Like he has a lot of eyes on him. It's like a very serious, you know, he's like, that's an excellent question. You know, he doesn't want to spook his shareholders. He has these obligations. He's like, I still have significant equity. I'm not rug pulling you guys. But just so you know, not only do I have to meet financial obligations, I'm using some of that money to buy more Bitcoin. And I thought that was so effing badass to say that in such like a, you know, a serious interview. You can't fuck around there, right? Like if Opti and I were there, that the security guards would come in the room and escort us out, right? So like, you know, it's very serious. Like you can't just fuck around and like, you know, smile and like, you know, make a joke and it's going up forever, Laura. Like, you know, he has to be serious. And his way of being serious was like some financial obligations, but I'm also going to buy more Bitcoin. That's a really good sign. Obviously, we know the Chad Saylor. We know how strongly he believes in this. But, you know, talk is cheap. Actions, I think, are you know, not only do they cost more, they speak louder as well. And him continuing to stack at the rate he's stacking for MicroStrategy and now using some of these shares that he's selling, you know, these options. I mean, like, do you blame? I mean, Michelle, you have more of a background in this. Like, these are options. They're going to expire. Like, that's just money he's leaving on the table. Like, it makes perfect sense that he would want to exercise those options, right?
Yeah, it's a normal thing. I mean, normally he would just sell it into dollars and then invest that money. But I think, you know, low key, he's pulling completely out of fiat and putting all of his money into Bitcoin. So, he's doing it with MicroStrategy. We've seen how successful that is. And I'm sure he's been doing it, you know, personally without broadcasting it. But as you said, this is a really serious thing. And I agree. I think it's awesome that he's just low key, like slides it in. You know, I'm also stacking more Bitcoin. I love it.
Yeah, it's classy. It's tactful, you know, without like pulling an Elon saying like, fuck SEC on an interview, right? But he's still sending a very, very clear message. Like, look, this is where I stand. Right. So I love that. He nailed that interview. Opti, what's your take on this, brother?
Yeah, well, you know. I also wish I had this. I was going to say like unlimited money printer, but it's obviously not unlimited. But we've seen him do the strategy with MicroStrategy. And like Michelle said, he's obviously most likely doing this on a personal level, but you just love to see someone putting their money where their mouth is. And, you know, as everyone's saying in the chat, like actions speak louder than words. And it really just goes to show that once you have true conviction in Bitcoin, it's literally the sell all your chairs meme, but like on a corporate level. And until other big billionaires figure this strategy out and realize that it's work, like Saylor is going to be so far out of the door that it's just he's really angling to be either the richest man in the world or one of the richest men in the world by doing this strategy. And it's absolutely incredible to watch. You know, people can say all they want about Saylor, but yo, he is so balls deep in Bitcoin. It's absolutely incredible. And I just wish we had some stocks to sell, Nico. Like, I wish we had this kind of market cap, right? So that we could do this strategy ourselves. But it just goes to show that I really do think that 2024.
Opti's a closeted contillionaire. That's why you dated Christine Lagarde.
Well, look, let's be honest here, guys. Like, we live in a fiat world. There are fiat strategies that do work, you know, love them or hate them. This is almost like I wouldn't say it's necessarily like a speculative attack on the dollar, but like he's playing the fiat games to his advantage to stack more Bitcoin. Like, how can you really hate that? Of course, you know, who am I to even judge Saylor in the first place? He knows a lot more things than I do. He's a literal rocket scientist. So it's just, hey, man, I wish I could stack like that.
You know, like, favorite part is I don't think he's even driven by trying to get richer than Elon. I think he's genuinely driven by like getting out of fiat, which is the best part.
100%.
Like, he's already rich.
Yeah. No, he said he was gonna retire, right? He said he's like, before Bitcoin, I was just gonna retire and like ride into the sunset. But I saw this and it was like, wow, like not only is this a major opportunity, but you know, I if this works out, which I think we all think it will because of Bitcoin's incentives, I think we can leave the world a much better place than, you know, the comments are savage. Okay. Anyways, guys, I do want to dedicate the rest of the show, about 30 minutes, to talking to Michelle Weekly. I'm really looking forward to this conversation. Before we do that, I do want to give a shout out to our sponsor. These Bitcoin companies, guys, are what makes this show possible. They keep the lights on, they pay the bills. One of our sponsors is KaboomRex. That's where I buy my Bitcoin miners. They're the most trusted place to buy, sell, and host mining equipment. They're freaking awesome. Their team is amazing. They're absolutely hilarious too, by the way. You can buy mining equipment with them. You can check out their inventory. You can check the link in the video description, or you could scan the QR code on your screen and you can connect with a member of their sales team. They make purchasing products easy and transparent. If you're thinking about selling your old ASICs, you can access their vast network of domestic and international customers when you sell your mining equipment with them. What are you waiting for? Check out KaboomRex today. Start your mining utopia. All right, everybody, let's hit the culture. We have a lot to talk about.
The Daily Culture.
Brought to you by SwanBitcoin.com. Swan is the best way to build your Bitcoin stack with automated Bitcoin savings plans and instant purchases, serving clients of any size from $10 to $10 million. We love Swan because they incentivize self-custody and dollar cost averaging. What are you waiting for? Visit SwanBitcoin.com today.
All right, man. I'm super hyped for this. As I told you guys, I kind of had this conversation with Michelle in Vegas, and we were both thinking like, man, I wish this was recorded.
Together?
Well, Unconfiscable. Nico, stop spreading rumors here. All right. Michelle, you kind of gave us the TLDR. So maybe just go more in depth on what your past life was. Everyone, you know, the rumor, or rather the speculation and what everyone's been saying on Twitter, is that you worked within the World Economic Forum, but you clarified that for me before the show. So maybe tell the people what you were doing, and then we'll go into what radicalized you.
Sure. So I did not work directly for the World Economic Forum. I worked in foreign direct investment, which is the ecosystem that surrounds the World Economic Forum. And also to clarify, because there's some confusion, foreign direct investment is not a specific company. It is an industry. It's an industry most people don't know about. I knew nothing about it. I got recruited to work in FDI and I was like, Googling, like, what is FDI? They don't want you to understand it. Like everything else, they want you just ignorant. So I worked in FDI. Everybody that I had never heard at that time of the World Economic Forum. I was working in tech. I didn't know anything. And then all of a sudden I was surrounded by all these people who really their sole goal was to get invited to the event in Davos. The company that I worked for, we provided consulting services within the industry. It is absolutely as shady as it sounds. And we hosted the World Forum for Foreign Direct Investment, which was like the B or C level event. You know, if you couldn't get invited to Davos, you would attend one of these events.
Nico's trolling. All right. Great. Great, Michelle. All right. Well, I guess the first pressing question is, get this out of here. Let's get serious here. This is some signal here, Nico. The first question, and this is what I asked you in Vegas, is it as bad and corrupt as we all think it is?
Absolutely. It's worse.
Whoa. Okay.
It's worse.
Okay. What makes you say that?
Well, like, the shit that you see, first of all, you're not supposed to know anything, right? So anything that we do know is kind of like accidentally leaked, or it's this like super groomed over PR version of information that they let out. What's actually happening is way worse. Like I will tell people all day and without an ounce of hesitation, like the shit that you hear about, well, they're doing this and they do this in order to facilitate that. And kind of here's how, like those explanations that you hear, those are all true, except it's worse. It's just, it's all corrupt as shit. There's like 100 or 200 people at the very, very top. And they're all making the decisions that affect everything. And they're doing it, with absolutely no regard for what's good for you or me or the world, the country that they represent, maybe the company they represent if they get a big enough kickback. But for the most part, it's, you know, like an individually driven, like get rich, get more power, get myself invited to Davos. It's so corrupt. Like I'm still trying to figure out how to talk about it in a way that is like digestible and believable. It's wild.
So let's kind of break down. This is fascinating, and we really, really appreciate you coming on the show, Michelle, to talk about this. A couple things, right? So you say it's a lot worse than what people see like on the news in terms of the 15-minute cities, you know, the whole ESG movement. But what do you mean by a lot worse? Like, is it about power? Is it about controlling people? Could you give, you know, I don't know how much you
degeneracy.
Hold on, without going down that route, but without getting into like, you know, if you can get into specifics, but like, what do you mean by that? That it's a lot worse.
Yeah. So, okay, there's I'll tell a quick story, and this is one of the stories that I like to use to kind of exemplify or show what I mean. And that is that the decisions that they make decisions based on, you know, personal incentives. They all want to get rich. They all want to get more power. And then what they do is they go back and figure out a way to support the decisions that they've made. So one of the examples that I give is, we gave out this massive economic development award, and that award had like hundreds of millions of dollars attached to it. Like whoever received that reward was going to get all this money for development economically. And the decision as to which Office of Economic Development was going to receive the award was made, I am not kidding you, at 2 o'clock in the morning in a strip club because somebody wanted to sleep with somebody else. Somebody wanted to sleep with somebody. So we're going to give the award to this guy's office so that we can like wine and dine with them. So they make that decision and then they go back and they just make up all the data to support the decision that they've made. And so I've said a couple of times, sometimes people will hear me say, like, I flew from Dubai to Colombia for a photo op. And it was related to this. And the reason that they paid for me to fly all the way, you know, that's a really long flight, was because they couldn't just put anyone into that room. They didn't want anybody in the room to know how the decision was made. You can't ask questions. So you have to be willing to participate in the bullshit, the lies, in the fact that everything is made up in order to survive, in order to continue to get paid, in order to move your way up. BJ saying it's often done in strip clubs. And it is. They just go out and get wasted and make these really high-level decisions. And then they go to the office the next day and, like, figure out a way to just support the decisions that they want.
And then let's talk about some of these decisions. So, like, and again, like, without getting into any specifics and whatnot, like, what type of decisions are these? Like, are these like for example, like in the Netherlands, there's that huge protest and that huge movement where essentially the government was trying to buy up all this farmland because, you know, cows fart and that releases methane into the atmosphere, and then, you know, quote unquote global warming, and what, I'm not going to get into that, but the point is basically a government land grab, right? We've yeah. seen that throughout history. So are those the types of decisions that you're talking about? The 15 yes. minute cities, the CBDCs, that's where I kind of want to go with this in a little bit. So what are those consequential decisions that you're talking about?
So I think that's a really good example. And you know, people unfortunately give them, the people making the decisions, the benefit of the doubt. Even if we believe, you know, even if we know and understand that they have an agenda that they're trying to support, we assume that there's some level of truth or something that backs the decisions, right? So maybe we know that overall, like, climate change hoax, and they're really dramatic about it. But we assume that they have looked at the farming that's happening in the Netherlands, and there's got to be a good reason that they're making this decision, right? Because it's hugely impactful. And for the most part, most of those decisions are not based on anything valid. Like, no, they don't actually have data. If they're showing you data, it's probably super skewed. They make the decisions ahead of time, and then they go back and figure out how to get public buy-in, how to get support, how to make it look like there's any, you know, important or legitimate way to have come to this conclusion.
Gotcha. It's very interesting.
Incredible.
And also, we are on YouTube, so, people have differences of opinions on climate change, YouTube. This is one of our guests' opinions.
Hey, wait, Nico,
climate change, but before we check out the info bar down below and take you directly to the Wikipedia climate change.
Nico, before we go into like CBDCs and stuff, Michelle, and again, you don't have to like name names or anything, but you told me a story about how they like completely faked your resume, and then the unlimited like basically the black card, unlimited like money that you had. And I think that's a very like important story to tell.
Sure. Okay. So there's two pieces there, and I agree, they're both really interesting. So I got recruited into this role, and I kind of had a bad feeling about it from the start, but they just kept upping the bar as they were recruiting me. You know, they'll pay you more money than you've ever made. You can have a badass title, look great on your resume. You know, we'll help you make up a title. The more important you sound, the more important, you know, you look. And so I eventually gave in. I agreed to take this job. And one of the first things that happened was they wrote a press release about it. And in the press release were a bunch of things that weren't true. So, you know, it seems kind of benign, but what got me was my mom called me, and my mom was like, what is this? They said I had a master's degree. I don't have a master's degree. I like barely made it through college. They said that I was involved in, you know, some women-owned nonsense, which, sorry, I wasn't. There were just like three or four things in my bio that they totally fabricated. And then they issued it officially as a press release. And my parents were pretty upset. I went into, you know, our marketing and PR office, and I was like, this isn't true. And they straight up deadpan are just like, oh yeah, it doesn't matter. Like, you look better the way we wrote it, so we look better. And I should have quit right then and there. I mean, that was, you know, you want to talk about red flags, that was a red flag. But, you know, you give up your life, you change jobs. Like, I wasn't ready in that moment to say, oh my God, like, what have I gotten into? But it was certainly the first of many red flags.
Incredible. Incredible. And then you mentioned on your trips, and then we can go into Nico asking some more questions, because that is also, I think, a very strong point that people seem to forget.
Yeah. So I had an unchecked expense account, which sounds really cool. And I got to go a lot of places. I got to take a lot of first class flights. I mean, it's super fiat, but, you know, it was nice. And it sounds great, but it just speaks to the absolute like irresponsibility and disregard. One thing I had actually totally forgotten was a thing, and I think I tweeted this. I used to be able to go to an ATM as long as I was traveling. I was in a foreign country. I could go to an ATM, take out cash, and expense the receipt. So I was probably laundering money for somebody. Like, I don't know. but that's how, I mean, that's the level of irresponsibility that's happening. You know, yes, I benefited for it a little while. But, you know, the other piece of that is like, who was I? I mean, I was really kind of a nobody. Like, you know, I was global director for this consulting company. And so I think the thing is if you look at where I was on the food chain and the amount of benefit that I was given, and you draw that out and imagine you go up a couple of steps and you just can't even fathom like the benefits that these people are receiving or taking, you know, depending on how you look at it. But if they gave that to me and I was a relative nobody, you can't even begin to imagine what like the C-level executives are doing, or, you know, the people that are actually at Davos.
This is crazy. And what value, like, so like what value do they provide? Like what, like, you know, you're extremely well paid. You have this, basically limitless, like, you know, you could just expense everything. You're traveling everywhere, you know, in luxury. Like, let me ask you something, like, where's the value? Like, what does this company do? Because it sounds like a company, it sounds like an organization. Like, where is this coming? Is this coming from tax dollars? Is this coming from, like, what is the benefit of this?
Bribes and corruption. The value that was being created was fabricated. We were providing value in exchange for money. You call it money, you can call it a legitimate invoice for services provided. Ultimately, it's bribery and corruption. So somebody would, you know, come to us and say, we need to open a new headquarters. We need to expand offices. We need to hire 1,000 people to, you know, for this type of role or whatever. And here's what we want to do. Here's the end goal. So help us get from A to B. And so we would provide the data. There are other companies providing other similar services, PR strategies. There are entire media companies printing propaganda. And there's this like cooperative effort when somebody has enough money and they want to make a decision and they need the support for it. So in terms of like real actual value to the world, kind of none. I mean,
it might even be negative. Like,
oh yeah. Yes. Because it's lies. And it's like, here's the data to support the decision that you want to make. Nobody asks, like, is that data real? Like, how is it vetted? Where does it come from? Like, nobody cares. It's just, it's about money. You know, this is a whole separate story, but we did a lot of business in China, and we took tours of the ghost cities. And one of the first tweets that I wrote about some of this stuff, I put up a bunch of pictures of the tours that we did of the ghost cities. And I'll never forget, like, realizing in my head, and I wrote, like, the last tweet in that thread is, we all went home and pretended it had never happened. Like, we went home and pretended that there was 40% occupancy in the buildings that were completely empty. Because if you didn't go home and keep your mouth shut, you didn't get paid. So that's how the game works.
That's absolutely, this is, yeah, BJ put it in the chat, like my head is exploding. Yeah, it is totally exploding. And look, I'll say this, like, does this surprise me? No. I've said this many times on the show, I'm originally from Venezuela, so I've seen corruption. But if, like, corruption at these heights and these levels, because this is like the top echelon of the world, essentially. Yeah. This is insane. And what makes it worse is, like, what makes it worse is essentially that these people have real power to affect the lives of millions of people all around the world. And from what I'm understanding with this conversation is, it's really to benefit themselves, and they're hiding behind this veneer of, like, we're actually trying to save the planet. Like, we're actually trying to make the world a better place. But you, as an insider, you saw the, you know, the it's just degeneracy. And it's not really about saving the planet and saving the world and making the world a better place. It's really about power and money at the end of the day. And they use these quote unquote noble causes, they've co-opted them in order to obfuscate what is really going on. And this is just, this is crazy, Michelle. I'm stunned. So this is a Bitcoin show after all, and I do want to.
Yeah, yeah. What, maybe before we go there, Michelle, before everyone calls you a spook, what radicalized you, and how did you turn away from this and find Bitcoin? And then we'll go into the Bitcoin stuff.
Yeah, I get that a lot. I also was in DC for 12 years before.
Oh God.
I know. So yes. Look, I worked in tech. I have seen a lot of stuff. I tweet about it sometimes. And I was absolutely a part of the matrix. But what broke me out was all of the lies. Like, I didn't know what fiat money was. You know, I didn't understand, like, all of these macro conversations that we had. Like, I was never having those conversations. I really just, like, I stayed in my lane. I had a great career working for tech startups, and I thought I was doing well. Like, I went to Dubai. It was really exciting. And then I got recruited into this role that we're talking about. And that is what really radicalized me. There were a few things that had happened during my time in DC that pushed me, like, super hardcore libertarian. But seeing on the inside how much of everything, you know, I think, Nico, like you said, we know that this is happening kind of in certain countries, you know, on the local level, maybe less so on the local level, but we know that this is happening at some scale around the world, especially in certain industries. But to understand that this is happening at the absolute highest level is really, really mind-blowing. And that fully radicalized me. I mean, it was a long journey. I mean, I think I was heartbroken more than anything, first and foremost, because it's like, what the fuck do I do now? Like, how do you, like, live? What do you do? Like, the role that I'm in right now, I'm working for a great company doing product development. This is the first job I've had since that job, because I was doing my own marketing and product development consulting. I refused to work for anyone. I just felt like I couldn't trust anybody. So I don't know. That was kind of long-winded. I don't know if I answered you, but
you absolutely did.
You know, yeah, you can't see all of that and not become radicalized. You either participate or you become radicalized and then hopefully speak out and be honest. I wasn't really sure. I spent several years processing all of this and like not talking to anybody about anything because I didn't think that anyone would believe me. I mean, even in retrospect, some of the stories I tell, I'm like, did that really happen? Like, yeah, that happened. I'm not even exaggerating. But 2020 was really pivotal for me because I started saying very early on, I had all of these friends and former colleagues in China, and I was watching very closely what was happening there. And then in Italy and Europe. And I was like, it's going to happen here. It's going to happen here. And people thought I was crazy. And then it happened here in the United States. And I think that obviously woke a lot of people up. But what that did for me was, I don't want to say give me credit, but it sort of put me in a position where a lot more people were willing to sit down and say, okay, what did you say happened? Because before, I thought there was no way that that could be true. But now that we're seeing the lockdowns and everything that they did through COVID, I'm willing to believe, you know, that there's probably more to the story here. So the job really radicalized me. And then COVID sort of helped me, I guess, get the courage to discuss it as like openly and honestly as I do now.
Yeah. And I've heard that story before. But I saw someone ask in the chat, how do I make my own seed phrase?
I'll do it Monday.
Check out the Bitcoin way. We just promoted them. They'll walk you through, they'll handhold you through this entire process. So back to the conversation, Michelle. Yeah. I mean, I think, my personal experience, and I haven't been as public with it. But there was a series of events in 2008 that affected my family, not only financially, but in the political sense, that really, really made me jaded to the system. And then fast forward 10 years later, that blatant in your face, because they don't, Michelle, I think we could both agree that they don't even hide it anymore. Like, it's kind of like 10 years ago, 5 years ago, they at least made an attempt to obfuscate it. Right. But now they feel so emboldened that they're just like, look, guys, this is what it is. Like, you know,
comply.
There's two tiers of justice, right? If you have certain political viewpoints, you get treated a certain way. If you have other political viewpoints, it doesn't matter what you do. Everyone looks the other way. So it's just crazy. Okay. So we are a Bitcoin show. And I do want to leave it on a positive note, right? And I do call the World Economic Forum on simply every time I refer to it as a contillionaire conference, because I think all of this is possible via fiat. I think that if fiat goes away, it's not that corruption is going to go away completely. I think corruption is innate in human nature. But I think that it's definitely going to take away this decadence, this excessiveness. I mean, the recently elected president of Argentina refers to this all the time. He literally says, he's like, the decadence of Argentina of these last, you know, 50 years, it's over. There is no money. And look what happened. He started cutting costs, cutting these things. And guess what happened? Things started to improve. Oh, well, you look at that, right? And then also the machines attacks. And when I refer to the machines, I really refer to the propaganda machine. So I'm talking about the legacy corporate media, their reaction towards basically anybody that attacks these institutions, the reaction towards El Salvador choosing to use Bitcoin as an alternative, the reaction towards Michael Saylor initially, the reaction towards Argentina, you know, basically anybody that is trying to choose an alternative system, whether that alternative system is choosing to consume alternative media sources, right? They want to censor the internet, or whether that alternative system is using a non-fiat money, they freak out. They get really, really, really scared. So my question to you, Michelle, since you were in the belly of the beast, so to speak, is Bitcoin going to fix this? Is Bitcoin the solution to this? Is Bitcoin going to clean out a lot of this incompetence and corruption at these the highest levels of government of power, really? That's the way to describe it.
Bitcoin gives me a lot of hope. It genuinely does. You asked me earlier about, you know, what value were we providing, the company that I was working for, and we weren't providing any value. And I believe that that's what Bitcoin fixes. It incentivizes value for value economies and, you know, disenables, I don't know if that's, it will disallow for so much of this to happen because you will be required to provide value. And so if you're not providing value, it's sort of, you'll get done away with. And it actually gives me genuinely like so much hope. I think there will always be corrupt people, but if we defund them, they will have, you know, very little power and it won't matter.
Yeah, I really agree with the theory from the sovereign individual, I think is like the most fitting, right? Where essentially they make the case that it's, if you separate money from state and people choose to opt out of non-state money, it makes politics irrelevant over the long run because essentially the grift of the politicians, instead of doing good by their constituents, really getting as close as humanly possible to the money spigot, that grift ends. Like that unlimited expense card would not be possible without a fiat money printer. Right. Exactly. It would not be possible. That wouldn't be an economically viable business. But my only concern, and Michelle, I think we were in a spaces together when I was hosting it for Swan, is the attacks by the state. So the recent one in the United States, which we've been providing a lot of coverage on, is the Elizabeth Warren bill. She's gotten 20 senators. By the way, there's 100 senators. For anyone who's not in the U.S., there's 100 senators in the Senate. She's gotten 20, right? You really need 60 for it to really pass. But, you know, so she still weighs off. But the fact that 20% of the U.S. Senate has agreed to essentially kill Bitcoin in the United States, self-custody, the Bitcoin mining industry, peer-to-peer transactions, not to mention the attacks on quote-unquote unhosted, which is bullshit, that's not even a term. Basically, they don't want you holding money that they can't confiscate at the flick of a switch. They don't want you holding unconfiscatable money. And there's attacks in the United States, there's attack in Europe. And these people at this forum, not to mention their hubris and their need for power, but really, Bitcoin is attacking their living, right? It's attacking their bottom line. So, and when you attack someone's bottom line, that's really when you're going to see the most aggressive, you know, response coming out of people. Does that worry you at all? Because we are getting into, I would say we are in the then they fight you stage right now.
That's what I was going to say. The then you fight you stage is here. It doesn't really concern me because to me, this was inevitable. I think this kind of started with COVID, you know, the hubris of we're going to lock you in your home. Like all of the veils were dropped. So it doesn't really concern me. My only concern is for people that are, you know, maybe less informed, less educated, and therefore less convicted. I think, you know, it may set adoption back a little ways because we're going to have more education to do. They are going to fight like hell. They're not going to let go of their power easily. So it's going to be a fight. And I think people are not necessarily aware of how serious the fight is going to get. But I also believe that we're going to come out on the other side and that we will win.
Yeah, and I completely agree. I think I've said this on my Twitter, which is, it's not Bitcoin winning that concerns me and keeps me up at night. It is the transition that worries me, right? And I think the transition is going to be very bumpy. But the way that you protect yourself, ladies and gentlemen, is taking that sweet, sweet Bitcoin into self-custody. Anyways, we are getting to the top of the hour. Michelle, it's truly
Let's give Michelle one last two sats on this topic and everything in general, and then we'll wrap this one up.
Hold your Bitcoin in self-custody. I mean, it's really that simple. I think people try to make it complicated and play out all of these scenarios, and it is really that simple. If you want to defund the state, defund the federal government, stop the obscene overreach that they're attempting, you can defund them by converting every dollar of fiat that you have, put it into Bitcoin, put it in cold storage, and do nothing. Do nothing else. Just wait. Don't let them fearmonger you. You know, they may or may not make you a criminal. Let them. Just wait. That's it. And speak up. Like I say this all the time, speak up, because if everybody stopped, you know, their power relies on people being unwilling to speak up against them because they're afraid. And if more people just spoke up about how much they disagree with and how crazy all this crap was, it would end it sooner. It'll help accelerate from one stage to the next.
100%.
Incredible.
100%. And you know, it's these are crazy times. And I think, you know, it really comes down to that. I can't find the specific quote. I'm having trouble finding it specifically, but there was a quote by the author of the Gulag Archipelago. And essentially this was a gentleman that this book basically exposed the crimes and the atrocities that were committed in the Soviet Union. And one of the things that he said is like, you know, if people just rose up and just spoke the truth rather than living the lie, none of this would have happened. And you were referencing it earlier, you know, when you were speaking, is that you had a choice between compliance, selling your soul in the process, and going on with the lie, even though everyone knows it's a lie, even though everyone knows it's bullshit, but you keep going with it, or you have the choice of standing up, right? But they will attack you for standing up. They will attack you for speaking the truth. And as Bitcoiners, we have never been as empowered in human history as we are right now because of what Michelle said. The ability for you to write down 12 words or 24 words, and if you're in a pickle, you're going to memorize those damn words. And that gives you the ability to not only vote with your wallet, but most importantly, vote with your feet, is going to completely change the power dynamics between the individual and the state over a long time, over a period of time. I don't know how long that's going to take. But Michelle, I was pleasantly surprised and pleased. And I learned so much with this conversation, and it was truly an honor to have you on the show today to talk about this, because I think this is a very, very important conversation to have, and I really, really enjoyed it. So thank you so much for coming on Simply Bitcoin Live. We really, really appreciate you, and for really highlighting this and shining light on what's really going on behind the Contillionaire Conference, to put it nicely.
And more power to you, Michelle, more power to you to, like, you know, even talk about this and continue to talk about this, and, you know, we'll bring you back on soon and we can share more stories or whatever you're working on. We need to spread the signal.
100%.
Thank you guys for having me. It means a lot. And the support of the Bitcoin community is invaluable. So I really appreciate you guys. It's an honor to be here, and I love you all.
Love you too, Michelle. Love all the Bitcoiners fighting the good fight. Michelle, why don't you tell everybody where that people could find you on the interwebs?
I am just on Twitter. My account is verified. It's the one with the blue check mark. I know it gets a lot of hate, but that's me. So it's just Michelle Weekly on Twitter.
Awesome. So guys, you could find Michelle Weekly on Twitter. Guys, thank you so much for tuning in
to another episode of Simply Bitcoin Live. If you enjoyed the show, make sure to smash that like button.
Wait, Nico. Sorry. But Wine's in the chat yelling at us. T-shirts are on sale for a couple of days. I don't know how long we're doing the sale on our T-shirts. I don't know what the discount is. I think he's like, he dropped the price down.
So scan the QR code. It'll take you directly to the simplybitcoin.com website. And if you guys want to help support the show and keep us on air, you please buy our merch. It really, really helps us. But thank you again, Michelle. Really appreciate it. Guys, that was our show. Like I said, before Opti rudely interrupted me, smash that like button. Consider subscribing if you feel like we provided you value. But the number one thing you could do to help push the peaceful Bitcoin revolution is share Bitcoin content. Wake people up. Remember, guys, I think it was the great Andrew Breitbart that said this, right? Politics is downstream from culture. If you want to take over the politics, you got to win over the culture. And we do that by making more content, making music, making art, winning over the hearts and minds of the masses, and reminding them that it's not left versus right. It is the party of orange, the party of freedom, Bitcoin, prosperity, opportunity, peace versus the party of green, the party of slavery, the party of nihilism, the party of central bank digital currencies, the party of nihilism, the party of war, the party of the World Economic Forum. You got to decide what side you're going to be on in this fourth turning that we are all living through these days. Wine says there's 21 shirts left, so get yours while supplies last. Anyways, guys, love you all. We'll see you tomorrow for the Friday episode of Simply Bitcoin Live.